Hi, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sorry I had to run here. I was running a little behind. Again, my name is Daryl Chastain, and I'll be presenting the results of a paper I recently published. I'll spare you the title. It's long. So, the decision to aerate in an arid region is pretty much a no-brainer. You have high evaporative demand, low rainfall. Anytime these pumps in this picture here, this is in northern Arizona, center pivot irrigated. Anytime those pumps are turned off, your crop is going to approach the land surrounding it. You're going to lose your crop. Where I do my research in southern Georgia, the decision is a little more complicated. We have a lot of rainfall. This rainfall doesn't necessarily come when we need it. Mid-season, you can have a drought. Right during flowering, you could end up losing your entire crop. So, to prevent yield loss and year-to-year variability, a farmer will choose to irrigate. And this is Arizona. This is where I do my research in southern Georgia. Notice everything's nice and pretty and green around it. For profit loss for a farmer can be dramatic. In my study, a study I did this year in 2013, this is an aerial photograph of my 5 irrigation treatments. You can see up here in the front, the squares up there, the rectangles up in the front. It's about 2,000 pounds per acre. We got all the way down to 300, 400 pounds per acre. So that's 1 year, same field, just due to rainfall, profit loss to a farmer. So whenever we choose to irrigate, we have a lot of considerations to make. Who's going to want that water downstream? Who's going to, or how we're going to affect the biotic environment? And every single ounce of water you pump to your field is going to cost something. So any year where you don't actually need to irrigate, you can end up really hurting your profit loss, or really end up hurting your profits. So right now we're at 60 cents a pound for cotton. In a nice year, a dryland farmer can really make out. But with all this, we don't really understand exactly how cotton responds to drought. I'm going to focus on source limitations. So under drought, you can end up shedding a lot of bolls. Everybody knows that. So your sink limitations are not going to be discussed here in this talk today. So how does cotton respond to drought? The objective of this 2-year study was to quantify changes in plant water status. That's leaf water potentials, the plant water status metric we used under irrigated and dry land, so two contrasting irrigation regimes. And we want to understand how the underlying physiological mechanisms interact to decrease source strength, or net photosynthesis. And based on some data we got over the past few years, we assumed, or we hypothesized, that we have a decrease in stomatal conductance, increase in other sources of carbon loss like photorespiration and dark respiration midday, and upstream of the carbon reactions, we expected to not see much of an effect. We've seen that in other data. So we chose Stripling Irrigation Research Park. It's in Camilla, Georgia. Nice humid region, a lot of rainfall, episodic drought. We chose 3 cultivars so we can say a little more about cotton in general rather than just one particular drought-tolerant cultivar. 2 irrigation treatments, dry land and checkbook. So checkbook is a method recommended by University of Georgia, and for each physiological stage cotton is in, you balance the amount of rainfall with the amount of water it needs for that particular physiological stage, or phenological stage might be better. So 3 times a week, go in and try to balance. It's a little rough, but it works really well. You get really high yields. And our design was a split plot, randomized complete block. We had 4 reps for each treatment in 2012 and 3 reps in 2013. So each day we went out, we took plant water status measurements with a Sirlander pressure bomb. You know, you cut a leaf off, put it in the chamber, get your water potential measurement. We also took air temperature, leaf temperature. We used this OS5P fluorometer down here to follow photosystem 2 in response to drought. We measured actual quantum yield and maximum quantum yield, and then with some other data, we calculated electron transport rate. We also measured gas exchange, so net photosynthesis. We measured dark respiration so we can calculate gross photosynthesis. Measured stomatoconductance, transpiration, just the standard things. And first and foremost, we had no cultivar effects over the course of 2 years. So either these cultivars are performing the same under the conditions we had them in, or the drought wasn't, or the stress wasn't severe enough. But we ended up pulling this data together so we could make more broad statements about cotton in general rather than these cultivars themselves. So this is an illustration of how much water each of our treatments got throughout the 2 years. 2012 here, water on the water in centimeters on the y-axis. Oh, treatment week. So that's treatment one would be flowering. Our week one would be flowering. So the squaring. So the little asterisk shows flowering on each of the 2 years. The yellow bars are the checkbook total. We ended up overshooting our checkbook multiple times throughout the season. Georgia's a weird place. You can have a tropical storm come in and drop a 16-inch rain event. So you get that on a Friday, and you're really overshot for the entire week. 2012, dry year. 2013, wet year is basically what it boils down to. So, you know, there's going to be a difference between your irrigated and your dryland farmers. For pre-dawn water potential, here we have pre-dawn water potential up here and midday water potential. Okay, so that's the uppermost fully expanded leaf on the plant, whatever that leaf is experiencing. Pre-dawn, you assume that, assuming there's no transpiration overnight, but we all know that there is some transpiration overnight, it's assumed to be in equilibrium with the soil. And it's based on all the data we've seen, it's a really strong indicator of what's going to happen midday. And midday water potential, you can have a cloud come over and you can change a megapascal or so. So it's subject to a lot of environmental fluctuation or variability, and it's not as strong of a predictor. So for our study, we're going to focus on these three dates here. Over the course of 2 years, 2012, 2013, that's where we saw the big differences. So for the rest of the graphs, red lines are going to be the dry land treatment, black lines are going to be the irrigated treatment. So what happens under drought? Where on these conditions, you have a decrease in net photosynthesis on these three dates. You have a decrease in gross photosynthesis. We thought it would be due to other increases in net carbon loss. The dark respiration trend wasn't really clear, but if you look at it as a proportion of gross photosynthesis, you're almost always going to see an increase in dark respiration just due to the difference in size of the two processes. Another net carbon loss under drought is photorespiration. We saw it increase under drought. So this is 2012 data alone, equipment failure on 2013, but we feel the data is still pretty strong. Transpiration also tends to decrease. Stomatoconductance tends to decrease along these. So transpiration up here, stomatoconductance, and water use efficiency. No real trend associated with our treatments, but it always tended to decrease throughout the year, so that's interesting in itself. Air temperatures were the same. You know, increased leaf temperature, and we pretty well know that photosynthesis will start to drop off past, 35? And leaf temperatures were fine, too. So leaf temperatures and air temperatures weren't impacting our data negatively. For all the metrics we took upstream of the carbon reactions, we found no indication of any biological significance. You can pull statistical significance out of this chlorophyll fluorescence data, but when you're talking 1%, the biological significance argument just kind of goes out the window. So FEFM, that's a pre-dawn measurement of what photosystem 2 is capable of. Midday is what's actually going on, how much light is actually being harvested. So, and for electron transport rate, no statistical significance, no biological significance. But in 2012, in our dry year, we saw a huge yield penalty. Dry land was about 35% decrease, so dry land farmers really lost out in Georgia that year. 2012, dry land farmers made out like bandits. It was a good year. Still pretty low yields, but compared to the irrigated farmers pumping all that water, they're just further decreasing their net profit. In summary, what happens under drought and cotton on a leaf area basis, this is the source strength, decreased photosynthesis. You lose more of that carbon to dark respiration. You lose more of that carbon to photorespiration. This is mainly due to decreased amount of conductance. We also have CI data. The CI data backs this up. So it's a substrate limitation, in short. Canopy temperature, there's a minor increase in temperature, but it's not necessarily affecting our data. Photosystem 2, upstream of the carbon reactions, that's not limiting under drought stress, at least in the level of stress that we measured that year. I'm sure you can knock it out if you put it under a heavy enough drought, but you're probably not going to make any money off of that field if you're affecting photosystem 2. No real cultivar differences. And again, under drought conditions, lint yield decreases. So we're going to use this data with pre-dawn water potential being such a strong indicator of what's going to happen midday. We're using pre-dawn water potential to schedule irrigation. So we go in 3 days a week, 4 o'clock in the morning, drive about an hour, walk through 40 plots, measure pre-dawn water potential, and make our irrigation recommendations based on that. Alongside this study, we're also monitoring canopy temperature with infrared temperature sensors, and that data looks really promising right now. It's really hard in a humid region to use sensors whenever you're dealing with evaporation. You know, there's low evaporative demand, and those leaves are going to be warm no matter what, so those thresholds might need to be modified. Our data is very promising. I have a poster you can go look at if you would like to see that data. And we're also looking at changes in thermotolerance. As a cotton leaf expands, young leaves handle heat really, really well. And this is photosystem 2, but we also have gas exchange data this year, so that's really exciting. And with that, I'd like to thank the University of Georgia, Georgia Cotton Commission, Cotton Incorporated, my committee, John Snyder, Guy Collins, Philip Roberts, Mark Van Ursel, Derek Oosterhaus, and the motley crew here is the University Cotton Physiology Lab, and also Jared Whitaker, Calvin Perry, he's the station manager, BJ Watkins picks my cotton and takes care of my cotton. So does Ivy Griner and Seth Bird, indispensable. He's a colleague that helped me out quite a bit. So this article's published. The full article is available online. If you need a copy, email me, and I will send you one. Or if you'd like to read the entire thing, that would be fun. And with that, I take any questions. Still in the initial part of analyzing it. What we're doing with that data is are you familiar with Idzo's work? We're trying to rebuild that crop water stress index, so it's basically temperature versus VPD, and we're getting nice R-squares, but we have another couple of people that are looking at some of those, like, above 28, above 32 thresholds to find out exactly how it works well in humid regions, but maybe by May we'll have that written up.
Mm-hmm. One last question I have, Daryl. Typically we think of instantaneous crop water use efficiency increasing a little bit as you as a crop starts to get water stressed, as it closes its stomata, and as it starts to really buckle down. But I noticed that the pattern in your case was that it actually decreased. Yeah. I wondered if you could just comment on that for a moment.
You know, you stumped me. Yeah. We saw it decrease over both years.
Yeah. Well, we occasionally see that happen as well. Mm-hmm. So I just wondered if anything jumped out to you that might affect it, but it's more of a quandary on our part.
Yeah, I'm as stumped as you are, I suppose. We saw it over 2 years, in a wet year and a dry year. So if it's associated with drought, I'm not sure, but.